council meeting on Thursday.
We are appalled by the willingness of the United States to use its powers as a permanent council member to obstruct efforts to adopt the most evident of resolutions, one demanding an immediate and sustained ceasefire. Three times this council has had an opportunity to vote for the ceasefire that is so desperately needed, and three times the United States has used its veto power, most recently this Tuesday.
We, along with the world, are closely watching how this council and its members have approached the conflict in Gaza. Meeting after meeting, resolution after resolution, this body has failed to effectively address this conflict. We have watched members of this council deliberate and delay while civilians die. A new draft resolution by the United States ostensibly calls for a ceasefire. However, this is misleading at best. This council should reject any resolution that further hampers humanitarian efforts on the ground and leads this council to tacitly endorse the continued violence and mass atrocities in Gaza. There are not enough hospital beds, there are not enough medications, and not enough supplies. Surgeons have had no choice but to carry out amputations without anesthesia on children. Our surgeons are running out of basic gauze to stop their patients from bleeding. They use it once, squeeze out the blood, wash it, sterilize it, and reuse it for the next patient. The people of Gaza need a ceasefire not when practicable, but now. They need a sustained ceasefire, not a temporary period of calm. Anything short of this is gross negligence.
A senior Hamas official says Israel cannot continue its genocidal war in Gaza without the support of its main ally, the United States.
America playing a role, being a complete accomplice in the genocidal war being waged by the Zionist entity or by the occupation entity against the unarmed civilians in the Gaza Strip, and the also full-fledged support for all of the massacres and the crimes which constitute a violation of international laws because of the administration obstructing any attempts to put an end to the aggression. And this means an American green light, a clear green light for the Zionist enemy to continue with its crimes. And here, we stress that the hunger war being waged and the ongoing massacres and the systematic destruction of all forms of life in the Gaza Strip would not have continued were it not for the support of this criminal administration whose hands are soaked in the blood of our people, the men or the women, children and elderly. And full responsibility falls on the shoulders of the occupation. This would not have happened were it not for the direct role of the American administration as a result of the war machine, which is completely funded by it, and also being a direct accomplice on the ground.
Speaking at a press conference in Beirut, Hamdan also called for an independent investigation into a recent UN report revealing multiple forms of abuse by Israeli forces against Palestinian women and children in Gaza and the occupied West Bank. The senior Hamas official added that Israel will never achieve its goal of releasing the captives in Gaza through the use of force. He also denounced the regime's, quote, war of famine against Palestinians in Gaza and called on international organizations, including the World Food Programme and the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees, or UNRWA, not to give in to Israeli pressure. Hamdan also warned that any Israeli assault on the Al-Aqsa Mosque or Palestinian worshippers in the occupied Al-Quds will not go unpunished. Palestinian resistance movements continue to push back against Israeli forces in Gaza as fighting on the ground continues. The military wing of the Hamas resistance movement says it has targeted a group of Israeli forces with anti-personnel missiles inside a building in Gaza City. The Qassam Brigade says it also struck an Israeli Merkava tank with missiles. Meanwhile, intense fighting continues in Khan Yunis in southern Gaza Strip, where the Islamic Jihad says it launched a deadly attack on a gathering place of Israeli troops. Israel has confirmed the deaths of more than 230 of its troopers since the regime began the Gaza onslaught. Palestinians, however, say Israel is hiding the actual number in an attempt at damage control amid the failed Gaza onslaught. The Hezbollah resistance movement says it has targeted several Israeli military sites across the Lebanese border. The group says it hit Israeli sites in the occupied Sheba farms with missiles. According to Hezbollah, the attacks left injuries amongst Israeli troopers. The movement says it also launched drone strikes on several other Israeli locations near the Lebanese border. The resistance movement and the Israeli military have been exchanging fire since the regime began its onslaught on the Gaza Strip on October the 7th. Hezbollah has vowed to support Palestinian resistance fighters battling Israel's Gaza onslaught by engaging the regime's forces on another front. The top UN court is holding the fifth day of public hearings on Israel's decades-long occupation of Palestinian territories. The oral proceedings are related to a case brought by the UN General Assembly following a resolution passed in December 2022. Representatives from a number of countries have addressed the ongoing session of the International Court of Justice. Let's listen to some of those speeches.
Occupation acts primarily on the basis of usurping land by force, which is essentially prohibited under international law and the provisions of the Charter. It also acts on the basis of suppressing the will of the people, seeking to degrade their dignity and deprive them of their basic rights. Today, the practices of Israel, the occupying power, are definitely the clearest reflection, unfortunately, of the failure of the international community to prevent heinous crime of occupation and to ensure the implementation of the relevant resolutions of Security Council, General Assembly, and the Human Rights Council. The Syrian Arab Republic stresses the need to hold Israel accountable for its grave and continuing violations of the provisions of international law, the Charter of the United Nations and its relevant resolutions, and the provisions of international humanitarian law, including provisions in Section 3 of the Fourth Geneva Convention of 1949, Article 47, and what follows.
Mr. President, distinguished members of the Court, I have the honour to appear before you on behalf of the Government of Norway in the present proceedings. Israel's occupation of Palestinian territory has continued since 1967. Recent developments give rise to the utmost concern. They include ongoing, indiscriminate and disproportionate use of force and other measures in the Gaza Strip, as well as illegal settlements in the West Bank, including East Jerusalem. House evictions, demolitions, forced displacement and settler violence against the Palestinian population are aspects of the Israeli occupation. Such acts run counter to fundamental human rights, international humanitarian law, and the right to self-determination of the Palestinian people. Mr. President, the Israeli settlements in the West Bank and East Jerusalem constitute a chief obstacle to any prospect of settlement and peace in the area.
Under the title, Our Path with Gaza Moves Forward Until Victory, thousands of Yemenis have taken the streets of Sana'a and other cities to reaffirm their full support for the Palestinian people in the Gaza Strip. Abdul Latif Al-Washali reports from Sana'a.
In yet another rally to support the Palestinians in Gaza Strip, thousands of Yemenis have filled the streets of the capital Sana'a and other major cities. They chanted slogans supporting Palestinian resistance and condemned the Arab world's indifference toward Israeli atrocities in Gaza.
The Yemeni people were raised since their childhood to love and adore Palestine and to love jihad in Palestine. Therefore, when the opportunity arose to have an influential position under the leadership of Ansarullah, they did not hesitate and went out to the streets, believing that their protests were jihad for the sake of God, as the least duty as long as the borders were not open for them, and they were not able to fight with the Palestinians.
A message to the European peoples. Your governments today are contributing to genocide against the Palestinian people in Gaza by submitting to America's orders to militarize the Red Sea. America involves you in its own problems. The solution to stopping the Red Sea operations is to stop the aggression against Gaza and lift the siege. This is the easiest solution. But if your government wants to submit to America's orders, you will see what we will teach. I mean, you will see that we will teach America a lesson that will never forget. And if you attack us, you will unfortunately meet the same fate.
Protesters praised the recent operations by the Yemeni army, including the sinking of a British vessel in the Gulf of Aden. They also celebrated the introduction of the submarine weapon into the Yemeni army's arsenal, believing it will enhance the success of Yemen's naval operations.
The submarines introduced by Abdul Malik al-Houthi are one of the surprises that the enemy is going to face if it continues its aggression against Gaza. The Yemeni armed forces, specifically the Yemeni Navy, still have surprises coming, a wide range of targets, and also a superior ability to obtain information at any time and place. Therefore, these are successive military messages, the content of which is that we will escalate further as long as Israel's war in Gaza continues, and Yemen has the upper hand in its waters, and this position will never change.
Earlier, the spokesman of the Yemeni army announced that they have successfully carried out three military operations. The first operation involved launching multiple ballistic missiles and drones against various targets in Eilat-occupied Palestine. The other two attacks targeted an American destroyer and the British vessel Islander in the Red Sea and Gulf of Aden. He added that the British ship was set on fire as a result of the attack.
Every Friday, people gather here affirming that they will never tire of taking to the streets to show support for the oppressed people of Palestine as long as the Israeli genocidal war on Gaza continues. They believe it is the least that all Muslims around the world should do as a religious duty toward the innocent civilians of Palestine. Abdul Latif al-Washali, Sana'a.
And with that, we come to the end of this bulletin. Thank you for being with us. Take care and bye-bye.
The bustle of life. The sound of living. Only sound will endure.
Hello.
IRIB English Radio.
A larger-than-expected rise in U.S. wholesale prices rekindled worries over the timing of interest rate cuts and brought a halt to Wall Street's recent rebound. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us.
Thank you.
British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. Inflation was hotter than expected across the United States last month, as it continues to fall back from its highest levels in a generation. According to official data, price growth dropped to an annual rate of 3.1% in January, above economists' expectations of 2.9%. In December, the consumer price index stood at 3.4%. The latest official data sparked a sell-off on Wall Street, with the Standard & Poor's 500 falling 1.3% and the Dow Jones Industrial Average dropping 1.1%. While inflation has fallen sharply since peaking above 9% in June of 2022, many Americans are still feeling the pinch. President Joe Biden, who's standing for re-election in November, must persuade them that the economy is working for them. On a monthly basis, the Consumer Price Index, the CPI, rose by 0.3% in January, up from 0.2% the previous month, and also higher than the 0.2% expected. The so-called core index, which strips out volatile food and energy prices, is closely watched as it tends to provide a better indication of inflation's trajectory. It also increased on the month from 0.3% to 0.4%. The U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, which releases the data each month, said the index was driven higher in January by the rising cost of shelter, including rent, motor vehicle insurance, and medical care. U.S. officials claim the U.S. economy has remained robust in recent years, adding millions of jobs and defying predictions of recession, even as the U.S. Federal Reserve has embarked upon an aggressive campaign to take on inflation. Many Americans have not been feeling positive about the economy as they grapple with their own financial realities. Now the annual inflation rate is easing back towards 2%. U.S. Federal Reserve policymakers are preparing to cut interest rates for the first time in 4 years. Wall Street had been betting that the central bank would start doing so as soon as May, after the U.S. Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell signaled that a cut was unlikely next month. Agence France-Presse has also covered the same story and tells us more. A larger-than-expected rise in U.S. wholesale prices rekindled worries over the timing of interest rate cuts and brought a halt to Wall Street's recent rebound. Markets shuddered after data released recently showed U.S. consumer price inflation slowed less than expected in January, dealing a blow to hopes of an early interest rate cut by the U.S. Federal Reserve. After staging a small rebound, U.S. equities slipped once more to finish the trading day firmly in the red. The Dow Jones Industrial Average ended 0.4% lower, while the broad-based Standard & Poor's 500 index lost 0.5%, and the tech-rich Nasdaq Composite Index dropped 0.8%. Meanwhile, U.S. Treasury yields, which can act as a proxy for interest rate expectations, rose on dwindling expectations of an early cut. Oxford Economics lead analyst John Canavan, in a note, said inflation concerns continue to drive U.S. federal rate cut expectations lower and Treasury yields higher ahead of the weekend, as import prices and the latest producer price index, PPI, release both came in quite hot. Speaking in Washington recently, San Francisco Federal President Mary Daly said the U.S. Central Bank should resist the temptation to act quickly as it contemplates the right time to begin interest rate cut. She claimed the U.S. Federal Reserve needs more time and data to ensure it realizes positive projections of inflation continuing to fall, adding that the U.S. Federal Reserve could afford to take a more gradual approach. She added, "Gradual doesn't mean slow. It doesn't mean weak. It simply means not abrupt and urgently, when you're facing a lot of uncertainty and you already have policy in a good place. Reuters news agency has also covered the same story and tells us more. US consumer prices rose more than expected in January amid a surge in the cost of rental housing. But the pickup in inflation did not change expectations. The US Federal Reserve will start cutting interest rates in the first half of this year. The increase in prices reported by the Labor Department recently was the largest in 4 months and occurred against the backdrop of labor market strength. But January is typically a strong month for inflation readings as businesses push through price increases at the start of the year, which some economists believe were not completely addressed by the model used by the government to strip out seasonal fluctuations from the data. They also pointed out that not all the drivers of inflation last month would go into the calculation of the personal consumption expenditures or PCE price indexes. The measures tracked by the US Central Bank to gauge progress towards its 2% inflation target. Inflation is slowing down, but probably not fast enough to encourage US Federal Reserve officials to start easing interest rates soon. Seema Shah, chief global strategist at Principal Asset Management, said, "It's important not to overreact and jump to the assumption that an inflationary resurgence is developing. Inflation was partially driven by segments that are less important for the Fed's favored core PCE measure, while forward-looking indicators suggest they will ease over the coming months." The Labor Department's Bureau of Labor Statistics said the Consumer Price Index, the CPI, increased 0.3% last month after gaining 0.2% in December. Shelter, which includes rents, accounted for more than two-thirds of the rise in the Consumer Price Index, CPI. Food prices rose 0.4%, the most in a year, which was partly blamed on winter storms. Grocery food inflation also increased 0.4%, the largest gain since January of 2023, boosted by more expensive sugar and sweets, as well as fats and oils, fruits and vegetables. Prices for non-alcoholic beverages shot up 1.2%, but cereals and bakery products were cheaper. Prices for meat, eggs and fish were unchanged. In the 12 months through January, the CPI increased 3.1% after advancing 3.4% in December. Economists polled by Reuters news agency had forecast the Consumer Price Index CPI would gain 0.2% on the month and rise 2.9% on the year-on-year basis.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
The presence of different scholars.
And God said, "Let there be light," and there was light.
The Creator made Adam in his image, then placed the world in his care. May you walk alongside the Creator in righteousness.
God of Abraham, take my child into thy hands, that he may live to thy service.
God has spoken to us before, through Abraham, Noah, Moses, and through Jesus Christ. Why should we be so surprised that God speaks to us now through Muhammad?
Viewpoint.
A critique of movies with religious themes on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of God, welcome to another edition of the program, Viewpoint, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program. And Brother Yasser and Sayyid Abdullah, my guest speakers in the studio. Brother Yasser, assalamu alaikum and welcome to the program.
Alaikum salam wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh. Always nice being with you, Brother Muhammad Jawad.
Thank you very much. Sayyid Abdullah, greetings to you. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam wa greetings as well.
Thank you very much. We are continuing, actually, the criticism of the movie Seventh Son, directed by Sergei Butrov, produced in 2014. Of course, we haven't finished its criticism in the previous episodes, and inshallah, we'll do that in this very episode today. Before me asking you questions about this movie, let's take a listen to a short part of this movie and then we'll be back. Don't go away.
With the blood moon's rise and Malcolm's arrival, the creatures of the dark will be more frequent and more powerful. These are her lieutenants. This is Radu. He has an army of assassins. The knife. Guards against spells.
That is disgusting. What does that kill?
Cowardice. Sarakan takes the form of a leopard. Zarahadra is the king of swords. Your consistency is admirable, Mr. War. Of all of them, Malkin. She's the strongest. She's the queen.
You know, I've seen Mother Malkin in my visions. It's going to take a lot more than salt and iron to defeat her.
Back to the program Viewpoint, the movie critique program on RIB English Radio. With me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sayyid Abdullah and Brother Yasser, my guest speakers, helping me criticize the movie Seventh Son, directed by Sergei Butrov, produced in 2014. Sayyid Abdullah, in this part of the movie, the master is teaching his apprentice about some of the creatures of the dark, as he calls them, that change shapes into bears, leopards, and the like.
Yep.
Is he really referring to the shape-shifting abilities or ability of the jinn or the jinns?
Maybe. I mean, the only creatures that we know of that they have the capacity to shapeshift are actually jinn and the shayateen. So, because, I mean, all the shayateen are jinn initially, but they are the only creatures that we are aware of that they have the capacity to shapeshift.
And also angels can shapeshift, right?
Angels, obviously, they can take form. See, it's not shapeshifting. It's basically taking form rather than just shapeshifting. So the malaika, they
cannot change the shape into a dog, as I've heard in traditions, right?
I mean,
or something like the pigs.
An angel can't take shape of form of a dog or a pig because maybe they are the essence of najasa.
Yes,
that could be accurate. But I don't see why would angels need to take shape into anything. The only angel that we're, from text-wise, speaking about text, that took shape and takes shape is Jibra'il,
yes,
the archangel. So he takes the shape
to,
of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa sallam. He used to take the shape of what a guy called by Duhya al-Kalbi. Duhya al-Kalbi was known to be a very beautiful man in his time. And so Jibra'il used to take his shape and come with a prophet, at times, obviously. And the prophet made a comment. He said, every time you see me with Duhya, don't approach me. So people understood that Duhya is, when he's talking to him, it must be Jibra'il in the form of Duhya al-Kalbi.
Mm-hmm.
So so unless they have a reason to take shape, take form, they will take form. Otherwise, malaika don't need to take form. Satans, however, the shayateen or jinn, in other words, they have to maybe deceive a person or play on a person or something. So they might take more shapes. The classical story is that Shaitan took a shape in the form of an old man when he asked Quraysh to go kill the Prophet, historically speaking, in text-wise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so Shaitan was known to take a lot of forms, you know what I mean? He was known to take a form of animals and so on and so forth. So as far as I know, the answer is is that jinn, they do take shape of form. Now, were these guys in the movie referring to that ability of jinn? Maybe. Or it could be like stemmed from it. Or sometimes it's just a Hollywood fantasy that they have that shape-shifting thing. Because shape-shifting is pretty much in a lot of movies, like especially in Marvel movies, DC movies, the X-Men series. There's a lot, they would have characters that change form. Even Transformers, for the love of God, cars can transform into, I don't know, different creatures.
So the
notion is always there. But did they take it from the fact that jinn themselves shift-shape? Maybe, maybe not.
What about mankind? Can they?
We can't shift shape.
Thank you very much. Let's take a short break by listening to a part of the movie Seventh Son, directed by Sergei Butrov, produced in 2014, and we'll come back with his criticism. Stay with us.
I don't understand. How can you be here?
I'm not Tom. I've passed on from this world. I stood against Mother Malkin. And I failed. But you will not fail. You are a seventh son, Tom. But you are also the son of a witch. There's never been anyone like you. Only you can wield the Umbran Stone and end her reign of darkness before it begins.
Back to the program Viewpoint, the movie critique program on RIB English Radio with me, Mamajad, hosting this program, and Brother Yasser and Sayyid Abdullah, my guest speakers, helping me criticize the movie Seventh Son, directed by Sergei Butrov, produced in 2014. Brother Yasser, the apprentice's mother, who just died in the movie, near the end of the movie, or rather was killed by the Queen of the Dark, the evil witch, returns to her wounded child, of course, in a spirit form, and asks him to endure and keep fighting. Her son asks her, "How is it possible that you are back after death?" She replies, "I've passed on from this world." Doesn't it refer to the life or to the concept of life after death? And the journey everyone is doomed to travel.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Not doomed, but destined rather to travel.
Yes.
Again, the concept of life after death, what actually happens, has been a concept or a phenomenon has, plagued the minds of human beings from the very onset of humanity, like what happens when I leave this material realm. And therefore Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, out of his mercy, sent down those who knew to explain to human beings, don't worry, your journey doesn't end with this material world. There's another journey waiting for you. Your journey continues. This is one stage and one stop of it. And that's what we have in the traditions and in the hadith of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam, that just like a fetus in the womb of its mother go through that journey and then comes into a new world, and then it's the same thing. You're just in a bigger womb, you're going to go into another world. There's no difference to it.
What do you say to the materialists who say that there is no life after this world?
Because they have no proof for it. So one of the things, even in their own scientists, in their things, they say you cannot make a conclusion on something you have no proof for.
Yes.
Therefore, instead of you making a direct statement, you should rather remain silent.
Mm-hmm.
The best thing about a materialist, because you are dealing with something that is metaphysical, beyond matter. There's nothing to do with matter.
Yeah.
Therefore, it is outside of your realm of discussion. You have no right to give an answer or a verdict. Therefore, you have to either remain silent or refer your question to somebody who is in that field, i.e. a philosopher, i.e. a theologian, i.e. a mystic. Obviously, the divine mystics and the divine philosophers and the divine theologians.
There are certain people who have experienced out-of-body experiences or astral projection. And now they say that, for example, because of like necessities, like they've been in a state of coma, for example, or they nearly died, basically.
So you have this, what are known as near-death experiences.
Yes, near-death experiences.
I mean, it's the whole thing that's
they have experienced it and they came back and they came back with the stories.
Yes, they came back so they saw certain things. And it's not something that is unique to a particular culture or to a particular place. It's something that is, you can call it universal.
Mm.
Throughout all religions and throughout all cultures and all places throughout the world and so on and so forth. it just, again, does this particular event prove or disprove something? No. It can be something that confirms it or emphasizes it, but it cannot be used as a proof.
Yes.
Because, for example, this is what that person saw, you and I did not see, nor can a person intellectually or somehow prove it to me and you. So mm-hmm. it can't be used as a rational proof for or against.
It can be a proof for the person who experienced
it. Proof of experience, again, to a certain level.
Yes. Okay, thank you very much. Let's take a short break by listening to a short part of the movie Seventh Son, directed by Sergei Butrov, produced in 2014, and then we'll be back with his question and criticism. Don't go away.
Let us show them what we do to cities that burn witches. We will avenge our brother's death. Let us give the world a taste of what is to come.
Back to the program Viewpoint, the movie critique program on RIB English Radio, with me, Mohammad Jawad, hosting this program, and my guest speakers, Brother Yasser and Sayyid Abdullah, helping me criticize the movie Seventh Son, directed by Sergei Butrov and produced in 2014. Well, we are still continuing the criticism of this movie, Sayyid Abdullah. In the nearly end of the movie, you can see a lot of these actions, witchcraft, and not only this movie, you can compare it with the lots of other movies.
Mm.
Lots of scenes in this movie and others with the same theme portray some legacy or heritage or trace of the legend concerning the war between humans and witches.
Mm.
So that's the whole story about all these movies, right? Yeah. If we look at the history, we find out it was kind of real. I mean, the war, it really exists. When the humans used to burn witches alive and sometimes even innocent women and girls by accusing them of being one, a witch.
Yeah.
Under the disguise of ideology.
Mm.
What do you think? Why is there this animosity between them? Don't we have any good witches or magicians as well as bad ones?
Look, the idea is that there are magicians, there are witches. Even the Quran testifies to that when he says, وَمِن شَرَّ النَّفَّاثَاتِ فِي الْعُقَدِ, those who do their spells and magic at night, and they try to do that to the Prophet.
We have it stated in the story of Moses and Pharaoh.
Yeah, so the
magicians came.
Yeah, so even in the Quran, especially with Sulaiman alayhi salam, there's a lot of magic happening. The Malikain, the Quran talks about Bibabila Harta wa Marut Aluman as-Sihr. They teach people magic.
Yes.
So there's a lot of magic in Islam, like mm-hmm. the text wise, and yes. even the magician in Islam, his punishment mm-hmm. is death. So, yeah. So what happened is that when Islamically looks at the concept of magic, is that you use the power of magic, the power of spells, to harm other human beings. And this, therefore, the whole science of magic in Islam is forbidden, it's haram. You're not allowed to go into it. And if a person is known to be a magician, then he needs to be executed. Now, back in the day...
But we also have karamas or wonders which are performed by the mystics, like even Islamic mystics.
Karamat and stuff, we have something else. You know what I mean? This is a completely different issue. Because magic, people like the Quran, when he talks about magic, he says, يَعَلُّمَانَ النَّاسَ السِّحْرِ. They teach people magic for لِيُفَرُّقَ بَيْنَ الزَّوْجِ وَزَوْجَ. They would learn just so they can divide between a husband and a partner, or they can harm other people. Even some ulama saying
if you do the converse, that wouldn't be a magic.
Yeah, so some of the ulama, they say even if you wanted to study magic, but you want to use it for a good way to help people, some of the ulama make a statement. So this notion was also back in the day was happening, where there are people who learn the witchcraft. Mm-hmm. And black magic was very strong back in the day.
Yes.
And the people, like when they know that this person is doing it and harming other people, they used to kill them. And in the process of this whole chaos, a lot of women got burned for no reason. Because how do you know she's a witch or he's a witch? Because she said so. Because she said so. Like, what have you seen? So it's not easy to prove someone is a magician. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And some people, like, they go into this kind of work, but especially now in some of the Arabic Muslim countries, we have a lot of people acclaimed to be magicians. In Iraq specifically, they refer to them as Abbas. they give them that title, where people go pay a lot of money, and she would do a lot of stupid things, and she would give it, like, oh, this is going to work, carry this, drink this, eat this, and so on and so forth, which is nonsense.
Yeah.
You know, because magic itself is a very hard, science to master and to get to know about.
I see. Thank you very much, Sid Abdullah and Brother Yasser, for your nice comments and answers to my questions regarding the criticism of the movie Seventh Son, directed by Sergei Butrov, produced in 2014. And fortunately, we have finished the criticism in this episode of this movie. Thank you very much, my dear listeners, for listening to program Viewpoint, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio. We bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
If you see a witch, kill it.
We're not all evil, you know.
I can't do this. I'm not like you.
Join us.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
Limelight. U.S. President Joe Biden has blamed his Republican rival Donald Trump for bringing border deal to a verge of collapse. The $118 billion package ties U.S. immigration policy to aid for Ukraine. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. America's national broadcaster ABC News has covered this story and tells us more. President Joe Biden said one person is to blame for the seeming collapse of a bipartisan package to change immigration policy and provide aid to Ukraine and Israel. And that person is Donald Trump. Speaking from the White House, Joe Biden said the $118 billion bill is the result of extraordinary effort by a bipartisan group of senators and represents the most fair, humane reforms in our immigration system in a long time, and the toughest set of reforms to secure the border ever. Joe Biden added, "Now all indications are that this bill won't even forward to the Senate floor." Why, he said, "a simple reason, Donald Trump. Because Donald Trump thinks it's bad for him politically, even though it helps the country." President Biden continued, "He'd rather weaponize the issue than actually solve it," claiming that Trump was threatening Republican lawmakers if they didn't oppose the measure. President Biden added, "And looks like they're caving in. Frankly, they owe it to the American people to show some spine and do what they know to be right." President Biden, who has been hammered by Republicans for months over the surge in migrant encounters at the southern border with Mexico, faces low approval numbers on the issue heading into the 2024 presidential race. In his remarks, Joe Biden sought to flip the script heading into what's likely to be a 2020 general election rematch, suggesting he would hit the issue hard on the campaign trail. "Every day between now and November, the American people are going to know that the only reason the border is not secure is because of Donald Trump and his MAGA Republican friends. If the bill fails, I want to be absolutely clear about something. The American people are going to know why it failed. I'll be taking this issue to the country, and the voters are going to know," he added. The bill text was unveiled on Sunday evening after months of negotiations and was initially praised by President Biden, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, and Senate Republican Leader Mitch McConnell. But just hours after its release, it was deemed dead on arrival by House Speaker Mike Johnson, who has spoken with Donald Trump frequently on the issue. And now it's on very thin ice in the U.S. Senate, as a growing number of Republicans say they will block a key procedural vote set for Wednesday, 7th of February, to move the package forward. Democrat Chris Murphy, one of the lead negotiators, expressed exasperation at mounting Republican opposition to the bill in a floor speech on Tuesday, 6th of February, asking his colleagues, "What the hell just happened?" President Biden, too, criticized Republicans for backtracking on their statements from the fall when they requested a bill that tied any further aid to Ukraine to changes in immigration policy. Just months ago, the Republicans were asking for this exact bill to deal with the border, to provide support for Ukraine and for Israel. President Biden said, "And now it's here, and they're saying, never mind, folks, we've got to move past toxic politics. It's time to stop playing games with the world waiting." The national broadcaster CBS News has also covered the same story and tells us more. President Joe Biden urged Congress on Tuesday, 6th of February, to pass a national security supplemental bill that would provide funding for Ukraine and for Israel and border security, hoping to bolster support as the deal appears to be falling apart on Capitol Hill. The president's plea came as more House and Senate Republicans have said they oppose the Senate-negotiated deal, which would provide $118 billion for foreign aid and overhaul key portions of the U.S. immigration system. Opposition from House Republicans was anticipated, but a growing number of Senate Republicans have also come out against the long-awaited agreement since it was released last Sunday, potentially tanking it for now. Democratic Senator Chris Murphy, Republican Senator James Lankford, and Independent Senator Kyrsten Sinema for weeks took the lead in hammering out a deal on the immigration portions of the larger package. In remarks at the White House, President Biden blamed one person for crumbling Republican support for the bill, former President Donald Trump. The result of all this hard work is a bipartisan agreement that represents the most fair, humane reforms in our immigration system in a long time, and the toughest set of reforms to secure the border ever, President Biden said. But now all indications are that this bill won't even forward to the Senate floor. Why? A simple reason: that's Donald Trump. Because Mr. Trump thinks it's bad for him politically. President Biden added, so for the last 24 hours he's done nothing, I'm told, but reach out to Republicans in the House and the Senate and threaten them and try to intimidate them to vote against this proposal. It looks like they're caving in. Frankly, they owe it to the American people to show some spine and do what they know to be right. President Biden said the American people want a solution that puts an end to divisive debates about the border with Mexico. Doing nothing is not an option, Biden said. Republicans have to decide. For years they said they want to secure the border. Now they have the strongest border bill this country has ever seen. Look, I understand the former president is desperately trying to stop this bill because he's not interested in solving the border problem. He wants a political issue to run against. Joe Biden said he'll turn Republican opposition to the border security legislation into a campaign issue. He said, every day between now and November, the American people are going to know that the only reason the border is not secure is because of Donald Trump and his MAGA Republican friends. On Tuesday, 6th of February, some Republican senators suggested they would support advancing the foreign aid portion of that deal on its own, contradicting the long-standing Republican position that no foreign aid would pass without border security measures. Republican Senator Lindsey Graham reportedly said it's time to reconstruct the package and limit it to foreign aid. Republican Senator John Cornyn also suggested the possibility of splitting off foreign aid. Some Republicans blasted Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell for signing off an agreement without sufficient input and rank-and-file Republicans. Democratic Senator and one of the lead negotiators of the bill, Chris Murphy, took to the Senate floor on Tuesday, 6th of February, blasting Republicans for the deal falling apart. Senator Murphy said the Senate GOP conference now just seems to be another subsidiary of the Trump campaign. Republicans who oppose the final product say the bill does not go far enough to deter illegal border crossings. The Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, said the Senate bill would be dead on arrival in the House. Separately, the lower chamber plans to vote on a standalone bill to provide more aid to the Israeli regime. The Biden administration announced on Monday night that President Biden would veto the bill if it reaches his desk, in the light of White House's insistence on the border national security deal.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio. Thank you. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Days into the